Hello and welcome to the Serious Games Podcast, all about playful methods for interactive trainings and facilitation. Let's get started.
And welcome back to the Serious Games Podcast. Today, I'm connected to Hamburg, actually not too far from Berlin, and Christian and I, we tried to identify the moment when we really met for the first time. It must have been a Play 14 in Hamburg 2018. Who knows? And since then, we've been meeting occasionally here and then on some conferences and beyond. And today, I'm really happy to welcome you to the podcast. So let's start with that. Welcome to the podcast, Christian.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Wonderful. And I know you also have a podcast. I'll put that in the show notes. But today, we are going to talk about strategic not working. Is it really define a plan? How to define your strategy? And let's also unpack how playful this can really be. And for that, you are the expert. I know you sent me a couple of materials that I will also put in the show notes. But it's really about having an inclusive approach to define, to think about, to maybe write down the strategy. Okay, let's see how that works. So here are my first two, I would say now, traditional questions. What should our listeners know about you? And how do you describe strategic not working in, you know, three sentences?
Okay, that's the first challenge today. Okay, I'm Christian Weinert. I'm a freelance consultant, a project management specialist from Hamburg, also living near Hannover. So I have more or less two points of interest in my life. I've been working in the field since at least 1990s, starting as a freelance IT consultant for a construction company, doing all their network stuff and so on. And then switching to an internet, chief of an internet company, little startup in 2000s, switching over to being an analyst and a consultant for the shipyard in Hamburg, of course. Yeah, you're not a real citizen of Hamburg if you've never worked at Blohm & Voss, which doesn't exist anymore, but whatever. And then going to the Bundesdruckerei in Berlin. So there's some connection also to Berlin from my side. Yes. And then switching to another consultancy and then switching back to being freelance and so on and so on.
Wonderful.
Point of everything is I have a broad experience in all different fields and different construction companies, producing software development, whatever. Yeah.
Yes.
So, and always the problem was, okay, what is strategy anyway? And how are we going to do strategy? Mm. And actually, it's not strategic networking, it's strategy not working. We are not working the strategy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meaning that we are taking a more holistic approach to how we are going to define our strategy instead of just sitting down in a room with a lot of people or maybe with only a small group of people who are then just looking at one possible future, more or less devise a plan that they're sticking to. And of course, the world out there is changing. The moment you have this plan finished, that is not really a strategy. It deviates from the actual world out there. You are screwed. Can I say screwed?
Yes, you can. You can.
And then, of course, then, our strategy, but it's not working anymore. But it's our strategy. We have to stick to the plan, more or less. Gotcha. Yeah. And that's always a problem in bigger companies and also in smaller companies that don't do this at all to keep up with what is happening outside and what should we do next.
And can you give us a little bit of a context? When was the first time that you used this approach and how did you, start implementing it? What was the initial spark, so to speak?
The whole concept is not so old anyway. So just looking at my I think it was based on a paper by Keith McCandles, the inventor of liberating structures, and my dear colleague Johannes Schartau, who is still working at Holisticon. And they put out their ideas in a paper from around, 2000 something. Yeah, they look it up. And it could only come to life based on the work of Keith and Henry, who invented liberating structures. Yeah, and gotcha. So the basis of this is liberating structures. We will get into this a little bit deeper later on.
Yes.
So the first time I used it was during the pandemic with a group of leaders in a company that wanted to reframe their strategic work. Mm-hmm. So we had a workshop in St. Peter-Ording with all these, all this pandemic. We had to not sit too close together and everything, but it still worked, yes. So, and we went through all these stages of strategy not working, which we'll dive into later. Mm-hmm. And afterwards they said, yeah, this is a very nice concept. So we now have another fresh view on what we are doing here and why we are doing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I mean, if we can unpack that example a little bit, and yeah, let's later then also make sure that we tap into, you know, what is liberating structures and how does it work. But back to your workshop. Can you give us a little bit of a context, like you know, how many people and how long did it last? What was the initial, you know, challenge that they, with you, tried to solve? Just a little bit of context.
Yeah, okay, so let's maybe dive into the theory behind strategy not working first. Okay.
Okay.
So because at the moment when we are doing strategy work, we are just looking at. Most of the time, we're looking at one possible future, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're trying to see, okay, what do we expect the world to be in like 1 year, 5 years, whatever, how long your strategy should run. But then we are not taking into account that there is more than one possible future at the moment. And so we are looking only at one string, at one beat into the future. And of course, we are devising the strategy, and then we are following the strategy for the next year or however long it takes for our next strategy meeting. Mm-hmm. But the theory behind strategy not working is that, of course, the world is complex now. Yeah, it has always been complex. So actually, we have to look at more than one possible future. Mm-hmm. And we have to do it in a regular basis. So we cannot just sit back and say, okay, yeah, everything will work out. We have to look at the possible futures and on how the world is evolving on a regular basis. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is then, of course, very important that that we also include a lot of people that are affected by these possible futures in the strategy.
Okay.
And normally you're doing strategy work by having a select few members of whoever has the say in your company, and then you're going through the motions with them, and you're deciding on the strategy, and then you're just like trying to sell it to the rest of the team. Yeah, and of course, then the first resistance says, "Okay, but this is not true," and I don't think it's the same that the future will be like this. And then, of course, you have to sell it, and maybe people don't even believe it because they have not been part of creating the future of creating strategy. And then it's really difficult for you to follow the strategy because nobody really understands it. Maybe, anyways.
Yeah? Yes. And again, I would just like to add, even if you go through a full, you know, foresight process, and if you do it, you know, over a long period of time with some external help, even then, you know, we're left with that one pager that we then need to sell and convince and you know, and of course we paid a lot of money, so it's really important, right? And it will be used as the North Star whenever we can. Now we've all been there, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But if the North Star is off course a little bit, then you're not going in the right way. And then, of course, things happen that will not help your company maybe survive, or that brings your company into difficult waters, which could all be avoided if you really do strategy work, you know, because as a strategy is... It's not working. It's a work. You don't just sit down and say, this is our strategy. We are following it. Bam, ready. Mm-hmm. And of course, the distinction between strategy and planning is also very important, because most people don't know the distinction between strategy and plan. So, yeah.
Yes. No, go ahead and make that very clear right at the beginning, right? So that we can then also navigate throughout your example, right? Yeah. Where do maybe also participants think or fall into that trap, yeah. that rabbit hole of planning and details and oh, this is what's happening next, et cetera, rather than thinking about and defining their strategy.
Exactly. So planning is easy, more or less. Yeah. Planning is something that we do all the time because it's the easy part. You can say, okay, the future, everything we are going to do is maximum complicated, so we know which steps to take to reach our goal. We can assign resources and budget and everything to these, so everything is fine. Yeah, we are in the blue world, where everything is foreseeable, and we can just have a plan. And that's the easy thing to do. So we tend to do to make plans. Yeah. What are your plans for the future? Yeah, so that's maybe something somebody asked you. Absolutely. You said, okay, I don't have a plan. I have a strategy. Because a strategy is just a set of rules that helps me navigate an uncertain future. Yeah, so strategy is used in games. And this is the that's why we're sitting here today. If you don't have a proper strategy, you can't win a game. Yeah, if you don't have a strategy in chess, if you don't have a strategy in soccer, football, and whatever you're playing, you will not be able to win the game. Unless it's by sheer luck or the person in front of you has even less of a strategy. Yeah. So if you're, I'm relearning chess at the moment. So, and I'm learning about all these strategies that there are in chess. Yeah. Develop your attack the center pieces, blah, 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 blah. So it's very important to see, okay, these are strategic guidelines that guide us through a possible future and through possible things that happen in the future.
Yes.
Okay. So that's very important. And based on these things, then based on these ideas that what could happen, our strategy, then we can devise smaller plans from this strategy to say, okay, now I'm planning to do this move, then now I'm planning to do this move, and I'm planning a little bit ahead in the future. And of course, if everything happens like it should happen, then my plan is followed through. Everything
might be correct. Yeah, yes.
Might be correct. but as in a good game, I have to always look what is my opponent, what is the market or whatever, where am I what is happening there, and I have to revise my plans based on the strategies I devised on what is happening in the real world. And this is a very important concept, that you're really doing strategy work. So you're meeting at least once every 3 months to revise your strategy, to revise everything that's happening and say, okay, are we still doing the right thing? Is our strategy still sound? Do we have to switch to another strategy? And what is happening with the plans that we made? Are these coming to fruition? Do we get the yields or whatever the responses we want?
Yes, and I'm just, thinking it through, right? So what you're saying is, on the one hand, if I have a plan, I can follow it no matter what, and then I can still accomplish my plan. But then the outcome, or where we want to get, that future that we want to unlock might not happen, right? Because, as you said, the world, the opponent, if we're talking gaming, but then also the partner, the real world, just developed differently in the meanwhile. So, of course, I need to, some would say, well, why don't you just adopt and adapt the plan, right? But then you're saying, hey, we're deviating and we might adjust the plan so that we can fulfill it, whatever it means. But that might not be coherent, or that might not be bringing us in the right direction that we defined as our strategy, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the very important part is, at the beginning of the strategy not working process, you are more or less defining your own North Star. You're finding the real North Star, and not some North Star like, oh, this is our plan, this is our North Star now. Nobody knows why this is our North Star, because nobody knows where this plan comes from. So at the beginning, what is we're looking for our purpose, but purpose not in this in this misused way that most people use it out there. Yeah, our purpose. We are really looking at the fundamental justification for the existence of our work. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That's a big one.
Exactly. So, we are, and there's a template. Mm-hmm. Our work exists to ... Mm-hmm. And this is important because, yeah. So if you're doing strategy work, maybe based on, you're doing strategy work for a certain, topic that you're mm-hmm. trying to develop. So if you're doing a strategy for your new product, our product exists to ... Mm-hmm. And this is important mm-hmm. because, and this gives context mm-hmm. then, yeah. And in my mm-hmm. worldview, and we can share this also, there's a pyramid, there's a pyramid of meanings, and at the top is the purpose, okay. yeah. And this is the whole sentence. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can do it in a much better way and deviate from the template. But the main thing is, yes, you have to say, we are doing this. Yeah, our work exists too, and this is important because. So, and this is then, and if you take out and this is important because, you have the vision. Yeah. So the purpose is the vision plus why we are doing it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, I'm looking forward to that example that you're going to share in a second. How many people do you invite? I mean, everyone has an opinion on that, right?
Exactly.
And how can you possibly define with a group the North Star that they all agree to?
Yeah, you have to invite everyone that could otherwise veto your whole idea, or just there's this German Begriff Flurfunk. Yeah, so if you go out of the meeting and start discussing the stuff that has just been said, or if you're just like spreading rumors about, the new strategy is not working because you have never had the chance to veto anything in there or bring in your opinion. So, of course, the smaller the company, or the smaller the unit that is devising strategy, the more people you can invite from this group. And you should invite all the stakeholders that are relevant to this decision, and that will help you follow through with these steps. Otherwise, they will block you later on.
Okay, got you. So it might be a lot of people, right?
Might be a lot of people.
But here's a your hack. I mean, I'm not sharing too much, but you do have some inclusive ways of working, and also with large groups, right? Wow, but it really feels like a white smoke moment. Is that a term that must emerge, right? Before we even talk about strategy, right? We need to clarify the vision, the purpose.
Exactly.
Right? Why do we exist? Why are we meeting in this room, in this workshop, to even discuss this strategy, right?
And especially, what are we working towards then with our strategy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we cannot do some strategy for everything that's not working. We need some clear goal. We need the proper North Star, the purpose for our product, for the field that we are working in, for the company that we're developing, for the NGO mm-hmm. that we're trying to
achieve the goals together. Absolutely. Yeah. So tell me, back to that example, I know you have multiple, but can you walk us a little bit through? So what was the group size? If we unpack one example, what was the initial quest? And how did you decide then to use strategy not working as an approach?
Yeah, actually, the group I was working with was a little bit smaller than expected, because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so these were more or less the four or five, or the, I think these were seven people, the heads of all the departments in the company. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to unpack how they are going to grow their business from the moment, from this starting point.
Wonderful.
Yes,
and just the setup. Is there anything specific that you would then need for this group? Is there some materials or some other things that they must prepare? before you, you know, start with the first invitation.
Okay. Yeah, of course, always, I'm always working with groups in a room that is has no table in the middle. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, the standard meeting rooms in companies all over the world, yeah, they have this big table in the middle and you can't really do anything with them. Because yeah. Everyone is sitting around the table and not being able to freely move around. So, mm-hmm. Ideal setup is always like maybe a few tables at the walls, so where you can mm-hmm. put down your materials. A few tables to stand at. Of course, chairs for the people that cannot stand for a long time. That's always important. Yes. But a lot of free space and a lot of post-its or mm-hmm. Mieterplankarten, as we say in German.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of good pencils to write with, so that you can afterwards yes. read everything that is okay. hanging up. Because the group is mm-hmm. documenting their own results always. Yeah. So okay. there's no central moderator that is writing mm-hmm. down things. Yeah. And I wrote down. You think this and this is this right? Okay. And that hangs it onto the mm-hmm. onto the board. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then that's important for you, right? That the group documents
exactly because their own. Yeah, because if you have a big group, you cannot yeah. So and this is the magic of the liberating structure that we're talking about, what we're using, because yeah, in liberating structures we always have smaller groups working together in several steps and then documenting mm-hmm. their own results. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to have kind of this workshop with a big group. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. So an ideal room, everyone is prepared, showed up in time, welcoming happened. It's clear why we're here. How do you get started? I mean, with explaining what will happen first and how do you introduce this process, and then even more specifically, this first conversation, this first activity, this first decisions
yeah.
that the individuals and the group need to take?
Normally I'm doing a agenda that is more or less vague enough so that people know what's going to happen, but they don't know in detail what is going to happen. Yeah.
Mm.
Because this yes. wouldn't make sense. People should be there with an open mind, with an approach mm. to yeah. So, okay, what is going to happen now? And of course, mm-hmm. there are a lot of skeptics. Yeah, it's always there. Are also always a lot of skeptics on the other side. Yeah, how can this work? And how can mm-hmm. we involve so many people? And does it really make sense? Yeah. So
yes.
It's the fear of not being able to shape the result. Yeah, but mm-hmm. You know, if you shape the result, it might not be the best result the group has to offer.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. So and then we are just going through all these different stages. Yeah, there are six steps in strategy not working, mm-hmm. and we're going. Each of the step is then announced. It's just like explained mm-hmm. shortly, and then people start working on it in short cycles with serious, having serious fun while they're doing it, because they
okay.
yeah, for the first time they interact maybe with other people yes. in the group. Most of the workshops that are still out there are still just like, you know, a lot of people sitting around, one person asking something, and then, you know, one people saying something, the rest is working on the laptops with liberating structures. They all get to work from the start, first alone, then in pairs of mm-hmm. two, in pairs of four, and all other okay. configurations, and always trying, always talking, mm-hmm. having their ideas back and forth, getting fresh ideas from other people, and then developing the first, yeah, why is our work, what is the fundamental justification for the existence of this product? Yeah?
Mm,
mm. And maybe even the whole process stops there, because everyone says, we really don't know, there's no, yes, we don't need yes. this product. Yeah?
Yes.
And then, of course, yeah, you're going to spend a lot less money. Because you're not starting to work top down yes. on a product that nobody really thinks is usable at the moment.
No? Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and trying to fulfill a strategy that, you know, wasn't even grounded and rooted in engagement and needs. But let's rewind that, because of course, as with every intervention, serious game. Method that we bring as facilitators, you know, if it doesn't work, we must adapt and we must either do something else or stop the process, right? Mm-hmm. But let's think about the group that slowly, with many little micro conversations, comes to an outcome. Mm-hmm. Can you share a little bit more how that then works? So this purpose, I know you mentioned the question, but how does it work? I mean, is it me thinking individually, writing, and then having a conversation? Exactly. But just walk us a little bit through so that we really understand how this inclusive group co-creation group protocol really works.
Exactly. Okay, so the basic structure that is always used in if you're doing labeling structures is named 1-2-4-all. Yeah, and the idea behind it is that you first have to give people a little bit of time to think for themselves. Yeah, so every brainstorming and everything, open discussion, the first people, the loudest people, are always blotting out the stuff that they want to, and everyone is instantly anchored to these words. So yeah.
Yes.
So the first moment is always, please sit down and write down your own answer to the yes. We are doing this product now, and this is important because write it down on your own, which helps every kind of people to first focus. Yeah, and of course, maybe in the beginning, before we start the whole process, we're doing something that is called impromptu networking. So we are asking, okay, what are you expecting of the new product that we are talking about today? And then you're going about, you're talking to first one person for four or five minutes, and you switch to next person, and then your mind is set on the whole thing. Okay, and now we're talking about the product. And then you've exchanged the first ideas, and then, of course, it's much easier for you to sit down and say, okay, this product exists too, and this is important because. And then when you've done it by your own, you find somebody in the group that you want to exchange your views with. This could be someone who you're familiar with, or maybe if you're more adventurous, somebody you haven't never met before. So then you're talking about this, and then you're asking, okay, what do you mean by this? Do you mean like this or like that? And I have this is similar. Let's maybe merge these together, or maybe let's do two different versions. And after ideally 4 minutes, this stage is over too. And then these two people meet another pair of people, and they do the same again. And at the end, depending on how much focus or broad you want to have, you say, okay, please give me one, your best example out of the whole group, or give me all your purpose. I would always, in this stage, based on this group, I would say, try to find the best example. Try to find one so that we don't have so many things to look about. And after 15 to 20 minutes, you have the first results on the board. Only 15, 20 minutes, not like a 2-hour open discussion where we're talking about single words, but after 15, 20 minutes, the first purposes are there on the board to see.
And what about this? Because you mentioned this persona that might want to shape the outcome and now sees something, oh, wow, something unexpected, something surprising popping up on that wall, and wants to argue now. It's like, yeah, but, you know, this is even more important. And last year in this process, we decided that. How do you address those either skeptics or the ones that, you know, have that fear of not being able to shape as much as they think their role should allow them to shape?
Of course, we are not jumping into this whole workshop without talking to anybody in advance. Very important, as always. Just do a proper Auftragsklärung. Let's try to clear up. So if you see somebody saying, okay, we don't need this exercise because I know what this product is about and why it's important. And then you say, okay, then let's take this as the starting point for everyone, and let's see, then let's do something else and discuss this, or maybe try to delve into it. What does it mean for other people? Is this vision, is this purpose clear enough so that people understand what you mean? without having developed it. Yeah?
Got you. And no, thank you for mentioning that, right? So this briefing call, this initial getting to know where the client stands, you know, what their real need is, what the problem behind the problem is, right? That of course is important. And it's like a general disclaimer in every podcast, I would say, even if we're portraying an ideal flow, of course it's not one size fits all, right? So we always need to adapt and adjust to, you know, the client's language, needs, requirements, and so on. Okay, so everyone was included. They're the first purposes there. And how does it continue?
Depending on how far apart the results are, you have to take different steps. But for the sake of, let's say, everything is pretty clear up front. Also, there was good communication about why we are doing it. Maybe even somebody brought the purpose to the meeting and everyone is agreeing on it. Now we are trying to find the one version that nobody vetoes. I'm saying vetoing because, you know, I don't need like, I don't need to, everybody saying yes, but I need nobody saying, no, I don't go with it. Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then this purpose is written down on a bigger scale again, so that it's there for the whole of the workshop. So this is something we are working on at the moment. And it might be even later on that we see, okay, we have to change it a little bit because of the things we discover later on. But this is the starting point. And the strategy not working is it's a knot, you know, it's like it's not linear. Yeah? So you always come circle back to the things that you talked about first or before. And then you always circle back and say, okay, is this still true? Do we have to make adjustments here? Is it still fitting to the whole picture? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I like that. I like that metaphor, right? So, you know, coming back and tying it together, right? And seeing if it's too loose or if it's a real knot that will then hold all of the, you know, construct. Okay.
Yeah.
What's the next step then?
Okay, next step is normally to see, okay, now that we have our purpose, now that we're taking the first look into the future. Mm-hmm. But we are not looking into one possible future. We are also by the same method, first alone, two people, four, and pairs again. We are looking at factors that are hard to foresee and not easy to influence. Yeah, so everything that really can go differently in the future than we would, because we cannot influence it. Yeah. So which factors are now maybe for our product again, or for the development of a certain part of our company. So what are the factors that really could influence the way the future that is evolving? Mm-hmm. So then we are doing a list of factors, and these factors are then we look at the factors, and then again, depending on the group size, if there are a lot of people involved, we can have different combinations of factors that we look at, or we are all looking at the same combination of factors. Yeah, and then the next method we're using is called critical uncertainties. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Critical uncertainties, meaning that there are uncertain things that are critical. Self-explaining name. And each of these factors that we're looking at can have two different ways of working out. Yeah. So either it can be very a lot of it, or not a lot of it, or not so much of it, or there can be So, sorry, it's difficult to explain without any pictures.
Oh, absolutely. Well, what I will do is, you know, some podcast players do have the capability of showing pictures. I will add some pictures to the podcast, but I will also add all the liberating structures that you are mentioning to the show notes, right?
Yeah, exactly. So let's maybe look, okay, two factors. Can we find people on the marketplace? So can we get new people to work on our product? And maybe the cost the cost of hiring them. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just as an example. And then of course you have you're putting these factors on a coordinate system, on a scale, x axis and y axis.
2x2 matrix.
2x2 matrix, exactly. So there are four quadrants in the end. And then you have, okay, there are a lot of people on the marketplace and they're going for a low wage, or there are a lot of people for a high wage, or there are not many people for a low wage, or not many people for a high wage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these, of course, all these quadrants now get names more or less, so that we can talk about them later. So so maybe if we are on the quadrant where there are many people for low wages, it's like, you know, the company's dream, because we can get good people for low wages. Mm-hmm. If there are not many people for high wages, it's like, you know, the dry spell maybe at the moment. We could do more, but we don't get the people. The market is clean. Nobody else. And then we're naming all these quadrants so that we can refer to them later. And what we did now, what we did now is we looked not at one possible future. In the future, we will get a lot of people for low wages. So this is planning, like, this is going to happen. And then of course, everything we are doing based on that is going easy peasy. But we're looking at four different quadrants of four different factors and their
and then their impact on us or on our strategy. Do you do this because it's two variables, right? Like people and wages of people. Do you do this with multiple variables so that you have many 2x2 matrix?
Exactly. So everything we think is very important, we should do a 2x2 matrix for every combination of factors that we think is important and crucial for our future. And this, of course, this is work then, It's not like, it's going to be like this and we are planning for this. Mm-hmm. It's going to be work. Okay, what are the factors that are going to limit us in the future that we cannot foresee or cannot control? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, identifying all these factors and then putting them on two-way matrices and then looking at the quadrants. And only if we have the quadrants, we can now then devise strategies. We can then devise real strategies. What are we doing in each quadrant? That's the important part. So that you're really looking at, okay, so how can we win the game for people to work for us in this quadrant? What other strategies do we need to do? Do we need to, I don't know, do we need to hire external consultants? Do we need to build our employee brand? What strategies do we really need to devise to be successful in this future?
Yes, wow. That does sound like a lot of work those seven people in that room that are now, I don't know, like two hours in that workshop, right? And now they feel it. And then they look at the agenda and say, oh my God, this is only phase two out of six.
Yeah, exactly. But I got a response like, oh, wow, this makes so much sense. This is like a real strategy. Now I really think about what's going to happen instead of just like, you know, guessing the future and then doing a plan that is based on this guess,
and on estimates and on wishful futures and ideal starting points. Gotcha.
And after you picked out three strategies, at least three strategies for each quadrant, you are looking for the ones that are true in all quadrants. Mm-hmm. These are the things that you can do always. Mm-hmm. And of course, you're looking for strategies that will keep you from harm. These are the ones that are minimizing your risk. So you're doing risk management at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Minimize harm. Okay, wow. Okay, yet another long list of possible strategies or things that those subgroups or the large groups found that they would be, again, helpful, as you said, because they are helpful in all quadrants, or they help us to minimize the risk. What's next?
A break, coffee break, more probably.
Yeah, sounds good. Got my coffee here.
Okay, then we are also we can also look at paradoxical challenges that we must face to make progress. Yeah, this is the whole strategy not working workshop is best be done over 2 days, because otherwise it's just too much in one day. Yeah, you can cram it all into one day, but it's too much. So if you want to also have exchange, because things are happening now. Yeah, people are talking about the first time they say, I've never looked at the factors that are really going to do something with our future. So things are happening with the people. So they need also time to talk and chat and make sense of what is happening now. So, but one part is like challenges, what paradoxical challenges must we face to make progress. And this is really depends on where you're at with the people. Could be like, we are trying to reach X, but also Y at the same time. They have to face paradoxical challenges. Like, okay, so we want to be a local brand, but also at the same time we want to work globally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how can we be a global local brand at the same time? Yeah. And then we're talking a little bit about, okay, what can we do to have these to address these paradoxical challenges, and maybe to see, okay, what is possible for us to do there. So this is the next reasoning step on, okay, what are we doing here? Yeah? So all these are building blocks for the whole start of strategy working. Remember, this is not one workshop you're doing and then everything is set, but it has the building blocks where you collect everything at the beginning to see, okay, where are we standing at? Mm-hmm. What do we face in the future? Which possible futures are there? What are the paradoxical challenges? And then, of course, the next step, where are we today? Where are we starting now? What is our baseline from where we are starting? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how do you do that? Hold on. I will put in the show notes this structure called Wicked Questions that you were just referring to.
Exactly.
And you're slicing it up. Okay, so next is then the baseline. What is our starting position today? Yeah. How do you do that? What's the invitation here?
The invitation here would be to see, okay, now looking at everything we've seen before, I'm glad to use the what, so what, now what structure, which is based on the ladder of inference. Normally, people just tell you what you have to do or what their conclusions are without telling you what they saw, which facts they are basing it on, and which hypothesis they were building upon. This, yeah? And this is, of course, the major factor for misunderstandings. Yeah? Mm-hmm. I just brought this example. Yeah. Our cat is meowing, yeah, and I'm putting some chow down for her. And my wife asks, "What are you doing? Yeah, feeding the cat? Why? Because she's hungry. She's meowing at me. No, she's not hungry. She wants to get out. So now we could have a big fight, or just now at least we understand why I put down some food instead of just letting her out.
Yes.
Baseline is okay. Mm-hmm. What facts did you notice about now? What the purpose, the futures, the strategies, the challenges we have. Mm-hmm. So which facts do you see, and what is your opinion on that? Which hypothesis are you putting on top of this? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what is your interpretation of everything? And the last step is this. So now what is, okay, so not what, what are we doing now about it? So what do you think we should do?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Huh? Wow. Now, Christian, I'm still, you know, you mentioned seven people. Okay, let's imagine, you know, we're end of day one and we are going to have a day two. How many conversations are literally going on? I mean, is that I now need to talk to everyone to get their opinion? Or is there like, we had two conversations and now there's a big presentation for the whole group? I mean, how do you organize all those little data points that are A, being created, B, might have been written down, and C, even if it's written down or shared, that there's also true understanding.
Yeah. Remember always the 1-2-4-all structure, you know? Mm-hmm. Remember always that for everything, you will start alone, but on your own, to ponder about the question and write down your first ideas. Mm-hmm. Then in the next step, you will always talk to somebody else. Yeah, and it should always be somebody else, and not always the same person. So the pairs should regroup each time you're doing this.
Mm.
And then, of course, these pairs are talking to another pair of people. So there's a lot of conversation going on. More or less the whole time you're exchanging ideas. You're spreading your view of things through the whole room by conversing to people that are taking up your ideas. And then later on, are building on your ideas and your conversations with other people. So the knowledge, and then by writing down everything and presenting it in the end, the knowledge spreads through the whole group. So everybody is at each point aware of what has happened and why it has it happened. And of course, you can also have a little, everything you share something, you do a short round of presentation. People come before and say, okay, this is our purpose and we think it's good because, or these are the factors and we think they are limiting because. So everything is always explained. So there's a lot of parallel processing in the room. And normally if you are doing like open discussion and or a big group of people and just one question, everybody has to raise their hand to say something, most of the brains are in idle mode. They're idling around and maybe looking at the phone or doing emails on your laptop. But now you're constantly in communication. You're talking to everyone in different combinations of the whole room. And if you believe in something like, you know, mirror neurons and everything. So yeah, there's a lot of connection going on in the room because everyone is thinking and everyone is in on this on this thinking process and on the results.
Gotcha. And then I'm just, you know, trying to figure out, what about a hierarchy? And what about the loudest voice in the room? I mean, you know, I totally get that this is a very, you know, grassroots, democratic, inclusive approach. And still, this loud voice, or I am, you know, I have more responsibility, I'm paid more money, the highest paid person in the room, is still there, right? So how do you address that? Is that something that you already make clear when selecting that approach in the briefing or along the way?
Normally, people that understand the game, won't book this kind of workshop if they have their own agenda and if they want to just like justify something they may. So they are just doing, they are giving you a presentation and they're giving you the eat or die approach. And then of course people are eating or dying you will not get booked by a company that is not embracing this kind of approach.
Okay, got you.
At the moment I'm pitching it to colleagues in my new company, and they're saying, I don't know if it's fitting for the target group, and I don't know if they understand it. And I was like, people, please, we are talking about highly individuals that are working with their minds, that have, of course, because of the structures, not been able to express or think in any other way. Let's just give them the chance to see if it's something like this, And if you then discover afterwards that there are a lot of people saying, I cannot decide this, I don't know anything about it, then you have something else to talk about with your employee. And like, okay, so you managed to raise a bunch of people that have unlearned how to think by themselves, maybe. So this could also give a good insight.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's a progressive approach, and you see how long we're talking about it. It's not easy to understand. And of course, most people are like, oh, I have reservations now. I don't know if you should do it. Is it working or so? And I always say, trust the process. If you have if you have ambitious people that want to do something and have a certain psychological security to voice their opinions and to voice the things that they think, then you will get very good results out of it, because the first time you involve and let participate a broad group of people in this, and afterwards you will see if the things that you have in your mind are also on their mind, and if your product will be, if you're talking on the product point, or if your idea of whatever you're trying to achieve with your strategy not working, will have a chance of to succeed.
Well, I think, you know, what you're describing is, you know, do you really want to hear, do you really want to tap into this group intelligence, yes or no?
Exactly.
Right? And do you want to, as you said earlier, right, do you want to shape it and sell it and as the best idea, the best strategy ever, the best plan that we could have come up with for that, you know, budget? Or do you want to, you know, co-create it with the people that do have the impact in the organization,
huh? And who are following through with everything you say? Yeah, because somebody has to do the plan, and we now we are like, okay, we have the baseline, we have the, the purpose, the vision, we have our strategy, and now we have to see, okay, what are our ambitions now? What which goals do you want to achieve? Yeah, based on everything we have now, what can we really try to achieve? What are our goals?
And then and how do you do that? And I mean, is that
it depends a little bit again on the group size. Yeah. So first off, most of the time there's already something going on already. So you have to collect everything that is already started and or somewhere in the making, because you most of the time you never start with a totally blank slate. Yeah. So this is just a collection again, one to four all is advisable. And then if you have a big group and want to really pull out some ideas without hierarchy and without HIPPO, then you're doing a 25-10 crowdsourcing. Yeah? So everybody writes down their ambition, and maybe the first step to go towards this ambition, to this goal, you're writing down on a piece of paper, then exchanging the ideas in the room, running, you walk through the room, giving away your idea, getting another idea, change. And then time stops. Everyone reads the idea. Maybe you talk about it, depending on which variation you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then you're grading this idea from 1 to 5. Yeah. So 1 is an awful idea. I would never do this. And 5 is a very great idea. I would sell my kidney for it. I don't know.
Okay.
Then of course, then you're grading it. If you're doing it good, then there's some piece of the paper where you just hide the grade so that nobody can look at it and say, oh, 5, this is good. And then you're doing 5 times. And at the end, you're counting out everything, every number. So 25 would be the highest result. 5 would be the lowest result. And then you're getting out the top 10. And this is 25 and 10. And then the top 10 ideas that are in the room, what we want to achieve now with the product, maybe if it's not clear what kind of feature set it should have or anything, what ideas do we have, this is 25-10. Otherwise, you could also do just collecting ideas, or maybe you even have a set of ideas that has been predetermined in another session. But most important is all these things, all these goals that you want to achieve now. That's the question. Maybe there are many. We don't know in which status they are. How far advanced are they already? Because some things have been started. Some things are new. And now the beauty of it. I say it's a beauty. We are now at the apex, more or less, of the first cycle of everything, and now we are pulling out our eco cycle. The eco cycle is this lying 8 number. Also a structure. Which is modeled on the cycle of life. So if you look at the laying 8, in the top left corner, this is the moment where something is seeded, where the seed comes into the ground. Then you're going down to the lower left side. Now it's getting its birth. So it's the seed is sprouting. Yes. There's a small seedling there. And then we're going up to the upper right side. And now we're trying, the seedling is growing into a tree, maybe a beautiful apple tree. And now it's in full fruition. There's a lot of very tasty apples. And we can reap our rewards from seeding and growing it and pruning it. And we get a lot of good apples. And after 20, 30 years, this tree is old. We chop it down, or in nature, lightning strikes. It burns down. Everything, the charcoal, everything goes into the ground. Is new soil. The apple seeds fall in there, and the cycle of life begins new. And this is the same with the ideas we have in our company. So they also have to go through a certain cycle to really come to fruition and to really offer us something to reap the rewards of what we're doing.
So that's why you mentioned earlier, we need to come back. We need to meet like every 3 months.
Exactly.
But do we then need to go through the whole strategy not working process again?
Not per se, but we are always looking at everything. Now our ambitions, all our goals, we are going to place on this ecocycle, and we see where is it? Is it somewhere? Is it maturing? Is it still in the earth? Is it so old that it has to be burnt down or chopped off? Or is it in some kind of, there are two points at the section of the lying aid, the poverty trap. Yes. All your projects that you always wanted to start, they are all lying in the poverty trap. You can do it for your own. You can do your own ecocycle with like your projects. Or is it on the other hand, on the right hand side, is it in the rigidity trap where you just don't want to let go of it? The old apple tree that has always been there, I don't want to chop it down. The old friendship that is not doing anything for you, but you don't want to, and you're still keeping it up, blah, 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 blah. And by placing all these things we have at the moment on this ecocycle, we are talking about, how far are we here? What stage does it have? And then you're getting an idea on, I had this once with Johannes too. I said, our website is still in the birthing stage. It's not really coming to fruition at the moment. He said, no, it's mature enough. We have to creatively destroy it. And this is the moment where we say, okay, now we have something to talk about. Otherwise, we would just have like talked in circles, because we did not understand that we see this point, this single point, in different life cycles, and based on the life cycle, we have to do different things. And this is again letter of inference. Okay, how do I understand what you mean? And if I want to progress anything on this ecocycle, I have to say what are the to do's that I have to do to progress it, and based on where it is on the ecocycle, I understand why we are doing it. So this is a very important part to see, and based on and then the prioritization. If we have to prioritize which are the 3, 4, 5 most important things we now want to progress on our ecocycle. What are the to-dos? And then we can start and ideally put it onto a board. Maybe you're doing Kanban, maybe you're doing Kanban approach, and then you have your first backlog of items and your first Kanban board, and you can really start working now. It's not like, we have a strategy, what are we doing now? Now you have the strategies, you have the baseline, you have the factors, you have everything, you have the ambitions, you have the goals, and now you also have the to-dos, and now you really can start working directly after the meeting.
So it's definitely more than just that shiny strategy slide.
Exactly.
But it's really a lot of micro alignments along that journey, right?
Yeah.
And that workshop, that approach.
The whole time we say, are these ambitions, are they feeding into our purpose? Is this ambition still something, is this goal something that is aligned with our purpose? Is this goal and this action something that is aligned with the strategy we are currently in, with the quadrant we're currently in? Or is it just something we have always done, but now the futures have changed, the strategy should be another one, and we should not do this anymore, only because we've always done it, but now I can explain, look at it. You see, this is the factor, this is the quadrant we're in. We are like in employee's nightmare. We've always done like offering fruit baskets. That's not enough anymore. We have to do something else now. We have to switch the strategy. We talked about it here. And that's why we should not do this one and not have this goal. We should have another goal now. And now we can talk about it because we really have everything. We have the strategy not worked. And we can talk about it and we can revisit each step. And when we are working on the next stuff that we want to do, we look at all everything we have here. We always check, okay, has something changed in the factors, outside factors? Has the job market changed? Has the investment market changed? Whatever we have there, we can talk about it. We can do decisions based on our insight and not based on, okay, we have always done it like this, or I think we should do it because everyone else is doing it. We have like this dashboard somewhere in the room or on a board virtually, and we can convene in front of this board. We can, of course, the Kanban board that we devised from it can be also broken down in boards for other teams. On the high level, we can work on it. We can see, okay, what is happening here? What have we do? Do we have to invest anything more here? Is anything changed? Are there no new goals now? So we have really, we can really start the strategy work now, instead of having some shiny slide. Nobody knows exactly what to do now.
What it means.
In five months or in 1 year, we're doing it again. It's just,
it's just the same and it feels the same, right? And then there's less engagement. Okay, so what I hear is all those artifacts are then well documented and referred to and used then as the starting point when you go to revisit that process. Now, I know our time box, and it feels like we can talk for another hour, but I know our time box is slowly ending. Before I ask you about the secret sauce and the ingredients that you mentioned very often, liberating structures, how do you make sure? Because I was wondering that the group is ready to move to the next phase. So, is that something that you check with the group? Is like, okay, did we map everything? Is there anything else? Is there something missing, or is that a different way that you sense this or listen or hear or feel that it's now time to move on?
The beauty of the liberated structures are that they are structured. So we are working from an invitation over the steps, working with the invitation to the result, to the documentation of the result, and then everything is documented somewhere on a wall, probably, or on something virtually. Everything's possible. And then everyone has brought in the steps before everything they have. So the moment their result goes up, the process is finished for them. Maybe if there are very divergent things popping up, short look at, okay, so why is one group thinking A and the other group thinking B? Okay. What is the problem here? Never start an open discussion. Never do this. Gotcha. But maybe ask a few pointed questions and see if you understood it correctly. Most of the time, if you're working in some kind of environment that has not so many, that is geared towards a common goal, the results will slot into each other and make sense. Maybe if you're working in an environment with a lot of pressure or a lot of disagreement or something, or maybe if you want to devise the next revolution or anything, this might take a little bit longer because of Yeah, people having very, very distinct and forceful arguments.
Yes.
Yeah, but in a business context, when the group is aligned anyway, there's not much things to discuss. And other than a moderated discussion or like an open discussion, you don't have to ask, can we move on? Because everybody has had their time to give their input. Mm-hmm. They know the steps, they have done a step, they documented their insights. Mm-hmm. They want to move on because they are finished. There's no I have not had the chance to say anything right now, or 15 minutes ago I could say something, but I was misunderstood, and now I have to say something again. It's not happening. It cannot happen because you're always talking. You're always you will always have some people that are not happy, maybe, or see, as you said, the hierarchy. Yeah, if somebody says, okay, let's try it. And he's in a group where four people disagree with him, and then he or she will see, okay, now my idea maybe is not the best, but I chose to let go a little bit of my control because maybe I'm overworked, 60 plus hours a week, stressed, burnout. I don't want to do this anymore. I have to trust the group that they are also doing good stuff.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of I don't even know where I... strategy is too important to leave it to one person, right?
Yeah, exactly, of course. Strategy is really too important to leave it to a small group of people that don't have all insights. Yeah, they and the worst part is if strategy is being done by people that are so far away from everything coming on the bottom of the pyramid. Yeah, so the top of the pyramid is purpose, then there's a vision, then comes the mission. But the mission, we can always at the end we can say, what is our mission now? What is the most important thing we have to do now? Then the strategy, then the goals, and then the to-dos that we really want to do. Yeah, if people on the top say something, and they don't make the connection to, okay, and what shall we do now at the end? So they're doing some strategy, and they're having some nice slides, and people at the bottom say, yeah, but what should we do now? And in this approach, we are coming from everything to say, okay, and now, what are we doing now? Yeah? And we're deciding together what are the goals, and you don't have to ask afterwards, yeah, based on your strategy, I will do this and this. Is this correct? Yeah, okay, let me take it to the group and decide it later. And then you have all these waiting times, everything.
Absolutely.
Waiting around for somebody to make a decision which you could make with the whole group in just one or 2 days and then revisit
it. Yes, and then, all those tensions and all those mixed messages. And as you said, the grape wine, the Flurfunk, and then all those other micro and larger ways of influencing people is happening. I mean, one could argue that starting with that shiny slide and then that might take a lot of time, going through the organization to convince and then come up with a plan that is somewhat consistent and aligned overall might even take you longer than just, going through that multi-day large group intervention that will build trust, that will be by default inclusive. And yes, we're going to talk about living structures in a sec. that will, again, raise that tension in that moment, but then you're there and then you can handle it. So I understood and I heard along our conversation a lot of little tips also from you, right? Like, okay, don't go for that open question, right? But look at the result, right? Rather challenge that result or clarify it, but don't open up the bucket anymore. So are you saying you're not doing any like parking lots or... oh, this topic also popped up, but we didn't have time to cover it. Do you do that?
I prepare it. I prepare it most of the time. But since it's so structured, there's nothing much popping up at the moment.
Interesting.
Somebody could say, of course, but then you don't hear everything. Mm. I don't want to hear everything. I want to lead the group to an... to result and not make open everything. So I always aim for open questions, but not for open discussions. Yeah, because open discussions are fruitless unless you're sitting around in the evening with a good beer in your hand and just want to talk a little bit. That's okay too. Yeah, yes, you can. But, sure, but sure. If you want to have a larger group, a meaningful discussion that is not somebody is hogging all the time, open discussions are just a death of productivity, I think.
Wow. That's so much wisdom, and thank you for sharing with us. I mean, here's my final, you know, questions. Number one, strategy not working. What's the secret sauce? I mean, why does it work?
So the secret sauce is really having participation from a broad group of people that really have to say something to this topic and leading them through a structured process that answers all the questions that you have about strategy.
Wow. I'll just not comment on that. yes, our listeners can just go back, rewind, and listen to this again. Now, an important ingredient, not a secret sauce, because there's a website and it's very transparent, are, of course, liberating structures. Maybe a handful of sentences about that. So I will put the link to the website with liberating structure, you know, multiple languages, et cetera, in the show notes. But how do you explain what a liberating structure is? And then I understood strategy not working is not a liberating structure, but then a series of liberating structures. Can you just clarify that without, you know, us starting another podcast episode on liberating structure, which I'm happy to invite you to.
Okay. Basically, liberating structures are a set of now 33, soon 43, because there's a new book coming out, I heard. Structures based on complexity theory and the work of other great minds that help groups of every size structure their work together so that everyone is participated, everyone can participate, everyone is heard. If you want to use like introverts, extroverts, people are also feeling secure in these structures because they don't have to step out and say something in front of the whole group and that have a clear idea behind when to use. So there are several different types of structures that you use in different situations, to gather information, to make sense of things that are happening, to try to pull out the wisdom of the crowd. Yeah? And if you want to know more about it and you speak German, there's a good podcast for me, the Research Praxis podcast, but there's also a lot of material in English also.
Absolutely. And I'll link that too. But again, this strategy not working, that's then, I mean, why is that a fixed format? Or I'll put the link in the show notes, but then I also understand that the liberating structures that you just explained, that there might also be other choices that facilitators use, let's say, during the, you know, baseline phase, for example.
Exactly.
So how does that strategy not working then fit in there? Is that an...
It's something special, more or less, yeah? So one liberating structures per time can do stuff. If you string them together in a string, then you can go through a whole series of questions, of invitations to look at certain things you want to solve or explore or whatever. So it's then stringing them together. It's a little bit like speaking a language. The more fluent you get, the longer the sentence can be. And strategy not working then is on top of everything, the idea of, okay, how is strategy work at the moment? What are we missing out on if we're doing strategy work? And how can liberating structures help us in this process to really go the extra mile and do something that is really strategy work and not just like, you know, a few people sitting together and having a shiny slide that nobody can do anything with at the end. So this is, and this is, I think this is where I want liberating structures to go, you know, go away from this, from a single structure and go to the bigger meta things that really shape the future of our working together and of how we find things out and how we are going to work in NGOs, in companies, in, in our private life, wherever.
Yeah, wonderful. Wow, Christian, thank you so much. And I know that whoever is intrigued to get in touch with you will find your contact details also in the show notes. But thank you so much for that wisdom. And I know we decided to use, you know, strategy not working as an example, but then, you know, all those little tips and tricks and how you not only move from face to face, but how you make this a truly inclusive, I would say democratized grassroots, I would say movement, but I would say probably intervention experience for the participants. I think that that's just phenomenal. I really think we should have another conversation at one point for this podcast to just, you know, continue tap into the wonderful you know, insights that you are willing to share. Well, thank you so much, Sean.
And of course, again, special thanks to Keith and Johannes for writing this down and for giving us the inspiration to use it afterwards and to fill it with life. So
absolutely, I'll put all the things in the show notes. So dear listeners, have a look. It's probably going to be some long show notes. And that's good. You know, don't forget to also revisit this episode and the other episodes on this podcast. But for now, we'll say bye-bye. And once again, thank you so much for sharing, Christian.
Thank you very much for having the chance to lay out my ideas to all of you. See you around.
Wonderful. Yes, see you around. And I'm just going to echo that. See you around in this or other podcasts and episodes. Bye-bye.
You can reach us at hello@keylearning.net. We're looking forward to your suggestions, comments, and feedback.